520 WGN. Hey, everybody. It's John Hansen filling in for Dean Richards on this Sunday, October 17th, 9:10 in the morning. And it is such a delight to spend Sunday morning with you. I got up early. I poured a warm cup of coffee and a little chill in the air. I think it's the first real fall-like weekend, Dave Schwann. I was golfing last Sunday. It was 80 degrees. Yeah. Didn't feel anything. But it felt crisp today. So yeah, good to see you, my friend.
It is. It's good to see you. And good morning, John. Good morning, Andy, and everyone. And don't forget the spectacular morning sunrise and the sun. It's glorious out here.
It was one of those mornings where I woke up and I'm like, yeah, that's why we live here. This is perfect today.
You were talking about cooler temperatures. It's 49 at O'Hare. We are down to 41 in Rochelle right now.
Did we get some frost? 43
in Dixon.
I saw some pictures of, I don't know if it would technically be called frost or just hard dew. I don't know what you would call it, but I saw some Twitter posts this
morning.
We'll
just call it moisture.
We'll call some moisture on the grass.
We'll just call it moisture for now.
I'll let the meteorologist determine if it was our first frost, because I don't think we've had one yet.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. Andy Mazur, big sports day. Not only Bears, of course.
Of course.
Huge day for, we could have a championship in the city today.
We could be celebrating a WNBA championship today with the Chicago Sky, just a few miles down the road from where the Bears and Packers will be playing, and that game gets underway probably right around the third quarter of the Bears game, 2 o'clock.
It's kind of a bummer it's not on at night, you know, just for the scheduling. I know that they would go against, well, they're going to go against NFL on a Sunday no matter what.
Yeah.
Just from a perspective of people watching and tuning in.
But it hasn't really hurt the attendance. It's a sellout.
That's awesome.
At Wintrust Arena. I mean, there were tickets going on the secondary market. Now, I know this sounds low, but again, and this is a relatively new experience for some people with the WNBA. I saw tickets as much as $220, $225.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you what, I think people having, you know, people, this is, let's be frank, this is a lot of people's first tuning into what the WNBA may be, right?
Right.
Let's be honest here. A lot of people tune into the Chicago Sky. I've heard more people talking about the Chicago Sky this season than all the other seasons combined.
Yeah.
I know this is a slow growth sort of thing for them, but I watched a lot of the game Friday. It was exciting. The team looks awesome. It's great. It was really entertaining. Now, it was a blowout, which really helped.
Which is good.
And they were draining threes, just the smoothest shots you'll see. And it was really impressive. And I can't wait to watch this afternoon.
Yeah, and a nice thing about the Sky this year, bringing back a Chicagoan and Candace Parker. She's a great personality, a very good basketball player, too, by the way.
Yeah.
And, a great ambassador for the WNBA here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. And then let's not forget Bears-Packers, of course.
Yeah, there's that little thing they call the oldest rivalry in the NFL, which has not been a rivalry much of late. It's been a lot of the green and gold has been winning a lot. But
yeah. I heard a stat on my way in that I think you said it was, is he 20? Aaron Rodgers is 20-5?
20-5 against the Bears.
That's hard to do for any one NFL team against any other NFL team.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. And, you know, the hardest part was, you know, you go back to 2018, which was Khalil Mack's first game as a Bear.
Yeah.
They played on Sunday night, and Khalil Mack got out to that great start and stripped a ball, and then also I think he picked off a ball as well. And then Rodgers got hurt. Next thing you know, the Bears are up. Rodgers comes back. And the Packers win.
Yeah, it was no good.
Yeah, so it's not good. He's also got 55 touchdowns in his career against the Bears.
It's probably the most anticipated Bears game since what, the opener of 2019.
Yeah,
also against the Packers.
Probably. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of thought that that this could be the time that the tides turn a little bit here, because obviously Aaron Rodgers is running toward the end of his career. With all, again, I don't bet against that guy.
Exactly.
I don't bet, period, but
right.
I don't bet against that guy that there's a few quarterbacks you just probably don't want to put your money against.
I don't know. I've been saying this all week. I was in on Chicago's afternoon news. And, like, look, I want the Bears to win. But when it comes to Bears-Packers, until I see 000 on the clock,
yes,
I don't believe a thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's been some very interesting games in this rivalry. You go back to 1989 with the Don Majkowski to Sterling Sharp, I believe it was, the touchdown pass that to this day in the Bears media guide, it has an asterisk by it because it's called the replay game, because Mike Ditka went ballistic because Majkowski was still well in front of the line of scrimmage when he made that play.
Yeah. I can't believe there's still an asterisk in that.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, he demanded it.
Hey, Schwanny.
Hey, John.
You okay playing a game a little later on the show today? I recorded in the promos without telling you. So.
Yeah, I heard.
That's the way to do it. You know, that way you can't say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Now, I don't have a way out. But no, yes, we do this every time we are on the air here together, that
yeah.
we do some sort of a not sports trivia, yes. obviously, but a
presidential
American history thing, because we are both
nerds
when it comes to that.
You said no other way around it.
That's right.
We
you
are
said
nerds.
It, I didn't.
Yeah, no, I mean... But we could geek out for hours.
You called me
here.
At home on this. All hours of the day and night.
Yes, I've had you on a lot. So what we're going to do later on to wrap up the show is a game we call Stump the Schwann, where I want the listeners to call in with a presidential piece of trivia. And you got to try and stump Dave Schwann. I'm his lifeline,
okay.
but I'm going to put it on his shoulders. So Mazur will have a few questions.
I've got a few already made up. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. And we want the listeners to. 312-981-72.
We had a lot of good questions the last time we did this.
Oh, yeah. We got stumped a couple times.
We did.
I will say.
We did.
312-981-7200 is the phone line, of course. You can always text in some questions if you want. We're going to be talking about the Chicago Open House here in a little bit. And I talked to the folks at the Architecture Center a couple days ago. I can't wait to have this conversation because there are so many incredibly beautiful buildings in every neighborhood of the city. And you get a chance today to walk into a bunch of them. And really, they have stuff going on all month long. So the other question I have for folks today, and Schwanny and Mazur, I'll give you a second to come up with an answer, is if you've got a favorite building in
Chicago.
Oh, you got one on the
oh,
got
yeah.
run on the fly. What do you got?
I love the John Hancock Building, whatever it's called now, but the reason being, my grandmother used to work in the department store that was in the basement there, Bonwood Teller.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah. My parents would take us down, my brother and I would come down here every once in a while to visit my grandma in the store, and I just fell in love with that building because I knew that once I saw it, we were pretty close to seeing my grandma.
Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah. That's really nice. I can't think of one, because, I mean, there's the big landmarks, and Andy got one of them there, and, mm-hmm. of course, Willis Tower, and you think of a bunch of those. But this tour, this open house, goes to, you know, I used to live in Ukrainian Village for 5 years. Some of the gorgeous churches in that neighborhood are spectacular on the outside and even better on the inside. We'll chat a little bit more about that, but start getting those in, 312-981-7200. Quick break, then far-flung forecast with Dave Schwann. After this on WGN. John Hansen in for Dean Richards on a spectacular Sunday morning. Just some of the colors on the trees are starting to change. I was out on the course yesterday, and boy, it was just so beautiful to see. I'm sure Wisconsin looks incredible right now. And then let us know how the leaves doing. Send us some pictures of your leaves changing. I want to look at that on the text line, 312-981-7200. All right, I'm excited for this. It's time for our far-flung forecast with Dave Schwann. Schwanny, this is fun.
It is, but I'm not going to do it until you play the rest of that Earth, Wind, and Fire song.
Oh, yeah, right. I know. I know. As soon as we started fading out, I'm like, you know, let's just let this play for
let
a little
play.
Bit.
It yes.
so good. Anyways, what do you got for us today, Schwanny?
Today, John, we go down south to Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm.
Or do you say Birmingham?
Birmingham.
No, I say Birmingham there, of okay. course. But this is a large city, actually, of course, in Alabama, over a million people. Typically, we do smaller towns, maybe out-of-the-way places, obscure things with a connection to history. But Birmingham, Alabama definitely has many different connections to history. It was actually formed in 1871 from a merger of three small towns.
Okay.
That was right in the middle of the post-Civil War Reconstruction period, as you know, John,
right.
1871.
Yeah.
But we bring up Birmingham, Alabama today because it is the birthplace of someone who moved here to Chicago as an infant and was a great man who we lost just this past week. Timuel Black
wow.
was born in Birmingham, Alabama, December 7th, 1918. And, of course, actually his family was part of the Great Migration, when
I
you
bet.
Think about it, moving here around that time and moving and settling on the south side in the Bronzeville area.
I was just going to say, had to be Bronzeville. For
very
sure.
much involved in the civil rights movements with when Martin Luther King King was here at various times in Chicago and many other places, a prominent historian and teacher, as we say, a great man. He died at the age of 102 this past week on October 13th here in Chicago. But Timuel Black, born in Birmingham, Alabama, December 7th, 1918. And right now in Birmingham, Alabama, they have sunny skies there. And it's 50, so it's just like it is here right
just
now.
Just like here. Man, 102 years. Imagine the changes.
What an extraordinary life.
And to live these 102 years, just the changes you would see. I mean, he's born in 1918. World War I is still going on for a couple more months, I guess.
His great-grandparents were born into slavery. His grandparents were born as slaves and then freed by the Emancipation Proclamation.
Wow. It's incredible to have such a linkage in such a short amount of span of generations.
Yeah.
But 102.
102.
Imagine that. He remembered the Depression, I'm sure.
Oh, sure.
He was 10 years old or so when that happened. And
we forgot to mention a decorated war veteran, too.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's funny you mention him today because in the next hour when we talk about the Chicago Film Festival, we're going to be chatting with the director of Punch 9 for Harold Washington, which just looks like an incredible film, historical drama, really, about the 1983 Chicago mayoral election.
And that really was one extraordinary time, I can tell you.
And let me say, I don't know much about it. I knew, obviously, Harold Washington won. It was right before I was born. I'm not trying to make you feel. I'm just saying that I only know Harold Washington from what I read in the history books. I was 3 or 4 when he passed. And I'm not trying to take my... I'm just trying to say that... As someone,
that's enough, young man.
But I'm so glad that this film is out because it shows what Chicago was like in 83 and how some things have changed and some things haven't. But Timo Black is one of the historians interviewed in it.
Oh, sure.
And the director
definitely.
We talked the other day and the director said it was just so great to have him in the film. Unfortunately, he passes as it's coming out of the Chicago Film Festival. That'll be really...
What is the name of this again?
Punch 9 for Harold
Washington. Punch 9. And that election will be 40 years in a couple of years now, in 2023.
Which means I'll be 40 a couple years after that, another year after that. Thanks for the reminder, Schwan.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, no. I appreciate that, our far-flung forecast. Speaking of far-flung, I saw this crazy story, guys. This is from Japan. And it's called A New Way to Fly. And with much of the population in Japan now vaccinated, they're trying to get more people in the air. And one way they're doing that is they have this vending machine. It kind of looks like the game where you move the claw and you pull out a stuffed animal. But this just has like spherical balls in them that would fit in your hand. And you press a button and out one comes and it has a plane ticket in it. To somewhere in the world, and it's a way for or somewhere in Japan, and you don't know where you're going, and it's just at the mall. You put in a certain amount of money, and you get this plane ticket. Would you ever do that? Would you be comfortable just rolling the dice and just finding out what destination you're going to? I think that sounds cool. I don't know if I'd ever do it though.
Yeah. So how immediate is this? I mean, do you have to take the flight that 2 days later or 1 day later or that day?
Well, I should have read the whole story, but
because
I imagine in the near future, it's got all sorts of destinations. So you fly to Tokyo, costs about $43 American. So many people are doing this because these are way cheaper than normal. It's a way to get it in. So you press a payment, you press the big red button, out comes the ball, you open it up, and there you have your ticket. It's a voucher that you can use in the near future, and it's a round-trip ticket. I've always thought how cool it would be to pack a bag and just go to the airport and see what the cheapest ticket is and just go there. I don't know. That's way a little more adventurous for my taste. Schwan, would you do that? I know you're a traveler, but you're more of a road tripper.
Road tripper, and you know, to get someplace quickly, of course, you'd fly. I guess I'm a little more old school in that I'd put the map out or hang it up on the wall and throw a dart to find out where I would go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and a lot of times the dart hits like the Southern Ocean and stuff like that because he's not very good with the darts.
It's even better. I'd like to sail. I'd be in the water.
Do you blindfold and you end up at the moon? Who knows where you go?
Where do you go when you hit the doorknob? Where do you go there?
Did you ever do that as
out the door?
and just go
turn around and come back.
Well, that's what the last 18 months has been.
Exactly.
Do you ever spin the globe and close your eyes and stop your finger on it?
When I was a kid, I did.
Yeah, that was super fun. Yeah. My parents got a globe in one of their rooms now, and that's I still do it as an adult man. I don't know. 312-917-200, we got a lot to cover here today. The one thing I did want to mention as well, and I know I'm going to forget it, so I wrote it down on the rundown. I don't often endorse streaming shows. We don't watch a ton of TV. We watch, you know, we stream some old stuff. I find myself always in the loop of just watching a show I've seen 10 times. But I want to give my full-hearted endorsement to a cool show on Hulu called Only Murders in the Building. And Rook is nodding across the glass right now. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of it. We have not seen it yet.
It is so fun. The premise is, basically, it stars Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. They are three people that live in a pretty ritzy apartment building in New York City, and they are addicted to true crime podcasts, and that brings them together one night. But it turns out there's been a murder in the building, so they start their own investigative podcast, and it is so thrilling, it's exciting, it's funny. I mean, Martin Short just kills me in it. And I don't really make a ton of recommendations for watch or streaming stuff. And I say, if you have Hulu, if you don't, I even watch it with the commercials, it's cheap, whatever. Only Murders in the Building is so good. You got to write that down. Shawnee, write it down, okay?
Okay.
Trust me, it is fun. If anyone has watched it,
I think I have seen some sort of a promo for this.
Yeah, I hadn't heard it yet, but I definitely watched it. Okay, we're going to talk about the open house. Shawnee, you had an update on something?
We do. We have a correction, and thanks to a listener who texted in with correct information. I had the population of Birmingham, Alabama wrong during the far-flung forecast. I was looking at the metropolitan area population of about 1,151,000. The correct population of Birmingham proper, 209,880. So thank you for that call, and we'll update the temperature in Birmingham. It's 54 now.
Well, that's great. Well, Shawnee, you were only 750,000 people off. So.
Something like that. Yeah. But thank you for that correction.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much, Shawnee. If you have any other corrections, let us know. No, but that happens sometime. Hey,
all the newscasts.
Yeah, no, those were perfect. Nailed those. Hey, everyone, if you've never done and really explored some Chicago buildings, I'm not just talking about the downtown buildings. I'm talking ones in some of the neighborhoods and even a couple of the suburbs here today. Open House Chicago is just this really cool thing. And here to talk about it is Sinway Mendoza. Sinway, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you. Good morning. It's a beautiful day of autumn in Chicago. And one of the biggest autumn traditions is happening now, Open House Chicago.
You're from the Chicago Architecture Center, who helps and really puts this all on. How long have you guys been doing this for?
This is our 11th year. Sadly, last year we did not have the onsite, and we're celebrating the onsite weekend this weekend. And yesterday we had a fabulous day. Weather, everybody was out. It was exciting. And today is our last day of onsite weekend.
Right. So let's explain that. So it's really a whole month-long celebration where people can explore different buildings or learn a lot about them. But it's this week in particularly where you have a ton of sites that are open where people can just walk on in.
Yeah, exactly the way it sounds. So for one weekend, we open over 100 sites all over the city. I like to say from Rogers Park to Hyde Park, from Hyde Park to Garfield Park and back to downtown here, because we do have obviously a good amount of it is in downtown because we are a skyscraper city. We are the birth of the skyscraper. So there's a lot of great buildings in downtown and that aren't even skyscrapers, like Orchestra Hall that are here. And, you know, like the Bridge House Museum is here in downtown in our beautiful Riverwalk.
When I scan through the list of sites you have, not only downtown but all over, there's so many buildings that I see on there that I go, you know, I've walked past that and go, I wonder what the history is behind that. I bet that's for a lot of people, it's buildings, maybe even in your own neighborhood, that you've walked by 100 times and wondered, I wonder what that looks like on the inside. Well, now's your chance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like the 17th Church scientists right down here on Wacker. That's
100%.
One of them. How many times have you walked by there and been like, I wonder what's in that building?
Every time I drive east on Wacker, before you make the curve around the river, if you kept on going straight, you'd hit that building. And I wonder what it looks like on the inside because it's a unique shape. It's shorter than the buildings that kind of surround it. and it looks really cool. What a day to walk inside.
Exactly. You can walk over there actually starting at 10 a.m. today, and you can actually finally go into that building when you probably couldn't on a regular day like tomorrow. That's Monday.
312-981-7200. I want people to text in their favorite buildings in Chicago, inside or out. They may be on this list, they may not, but what a fun discussion point here this morning. How do you pick these buildings, right? Do you talk to people in the neighborhoods, ask them which ones are historic and important to them? How do you come up with the list?
Well, John, we're very fortunate because a lot of people reach out to us. We actually do put something out, but a lot of times later in the summer, sites start reaching out like, hey, we want to be a part of Open House Chicago because it's been so successful over the years. You know, in the past, we got to like 300 sites and all around the city, that a lot of sites come to us and say, hey, we want to open our doors. We want people to come in. And, you know, there's some that we have to say, well, we have so many sites, we can't have you participate because there's so many great sites in Chicago, so many great skyscrapers, beautiful churches, you know, like in Ukrainian Village and in places like Garfield Park. There's just so much in the city that it really is a celebration of Chicago.
When people walk in, how do they learn about the history of the building? Because is it just walking in, you look up, you go, okay. I know that they can use the app and kind of do a little self-guided tour, right?
Yeah. They can look at our OHC app, download it on, you know, Android or Apple, whatever phone they use. And inside of it will be information. But a lot of times our sites also have tours going on that they set up themselves. Like, for example, at the Skyline Club, they had one of the architects there all day yesterday giving out tours and talking to people who came in for Open House Chicago specifically on why the Skyline Club is this very cool, unique building in downtown Chicago.
What's one of your favorites this year? Maybe a new one that you guys haven't shown off before, or something that just caught your eye or was surprising to you.
Well, so this year, you know, I happen to have gone out to Garfield Park to a basilica called Our Lady of Sorrows. Now, Our Lady of Sorrows is on the far west side in Garfield Park, and it was just one of the most spectacular buildings I have ever seen on the inside. And the father came out of the congregation came out to greet us and take us around and tell us about it. And the stuff that is in there is historic. It was built in the late 1800s, early 1900s, because it took a while to build the basilica. And it was a working class neighborhood, very Chicago historic, you know, and many different cultures helped build it. So there's so much history in this building and the beauty, the sheer beauty of it. And in this neighborhood where, you know, a lot of Chicagoans don't tend to go as much to Garfield Park.
Right.
A lot of us stay in the downtown area, or we stay within our neighborhoods,
right,
because we're a city of neighborhoods. But I saw this church and I said, I came back telling people, look, you got to see this place. You got to see. And I have to think that many people do that if they go to some place in Hyde Park and they see, or they go to the Moody Church for the first time. I saw a lot of people posting pictures of the Moody Church out here in the near North Side, and spectacular places, right? Like, we're very, very fortunate to have so much just in this city.
There's something about walking into an old building, right, as opposed to reading about it or seeing pictures of it. There is a feeling you get of history. I don't know. I'm just a history nerd, too, so I just love that stuff. For example, I saw the Givens churches in Beverly, and people can go inside. I've never been inside, but I've seen the outside, the castle,
yeah,
in Beverly. And we saw it on Your Hometown for our series here on WGN Radio. It's not on your list because you're not going out to Barrington, but just last week I got a chance to go see the White House in Barrington, this old single-family home that has been renovated, has a ballroom on the third floor. You can almost feel as you walk through the halls the people that were there and how these buildings have changed over the years and been changed their purpose even. And that's cool too.
Yeah. For example, in Rogers Park, we have the Lang House. The Lang House in Rogers Park was this getaway built in 1919, right before the Roaring Twenties. They built this beautiful home that was a getaway when Rogers Park wasn't part of the city. It was actually almost like a suburb way out there that what we think of, like, you know, somewhere like Libertyville now today, that's out there. And it's this beautiful home that, you know, it's been repurposed. It was part of Loyola for a little while, after it was someone's actual, like, mansion, essentially. And now it is a place where people rent it for, you know, weddings and different events. But there's this beautiful staircase that goes, and it's been repurposed and such. And a lot of the original stuff, like the walls, are still there. And it's just incredible to have a gem like that in such a wonderful neighborhood like Rogers Park that also is known for its murals. And, you know, I have to mention that we have a self-guided tour in our OHC app that's all dedicated to the Rogers Park murals that are there.
That's really cool. We're going to take a quick commercial break. By the way, we've gotten some great texts in, some hidden treasure buildings. One texter says the Pittsfield building. Another says the Marquette building. The Rookery is another
Rookery
building.
Rookery is a really good building.
Our producer is putting his hands in the air. I've been to a wedding at the Rookery. Great stuff.
Wow.
Someone says the Union League Club building.
Yes, that is an actual site this year as well.
Oh, great. We got one from the St. John Church on Carpenter Street. My father was born in 1915 and was baptized there. We were there for Christmas Mass 102 years later in 2017. How cool is that? All right, I'm getting goosebumps for this stuff. 720 WGN, we're talking about the open house going on all over Chicago today with Sinway Mendoza, the Director of Communications with the Chicago Architecture Center. And so today until 5 is when people can go into a lot of these buildings, and you can go to the website or download the app to find them. But there's stuff going on throughout the rest of the month, right?
Yes. So we have we encourage people to continue to do Open House Chicago through our OHC app. We have over 30 self-guided tours all over the city. You know, some of the new ones this year are the Obamas in Chicago. We encourage people to go into Hyde Park. And we also give recommendations like, hey, while you're in Hyde Park, why don't you do this? Why don't you go to Valois is actually one of the sites that I would recommend everybody go do that tour and go into some of those, like, go see the Obama, you know, chair at Valois in Hyde Park, which I bet a good amount of Chicagoans have been. But, like, we have the Rogers Park murals, the Pilsen murals. We have a lot of self-guided tours like that. We have some bike tours. So, you know, it's the best time of the year to explore, in my opinion, because it's fall, and OHC provides that through the OHC app.
That's great. I'm just trying to think of my favorite building. There's so many. Honestly, it's probably Wrigley Field. I know that's yes. an easy answer, yes. but, like, it is – it's probably the first Chicago building I ever went to that my dad took me to, and I used to live right over there, and it's obviously changed a lot, but they've kept a lot of the, you know, not the original structure, but some of the changes they made in the 30s. I drive down Lakeshore Drive a lot, and when you come on in at the Drake Hotel, got a great view. We've got so many great texts. The Chicago Temple Methodist Church on the top floors of the skyscraper. It's beautiful. 630 says the elevators in the Pittsfield building scared me as a kid. I don't know if they're haunted. 110 North Wacker, the Bank of America Tower.
Yes.
55th floor is open with amazing views of the West Loop. Someone texted in the church in Logan Square where they do circus training now is pretty cool.
Yeah, I even heard that, but
yes.
I'm going to have to look into that.
Well, and we were talking during the break of, you know, in my neighborhood, some of the churches have been converted into condos, and I know that divides people, but for me personally, I love, if they can keep the building there and people can walk by and still look at the original brick that it has, all the power to be able to keep that building, right?
Yeah, I agree. I would say preserving the buildings and repurposing them is very, very important. And I agree with you. If there's something to be reused, these beautiful buildings that we have in Chicago historically, let's keep them. Let's continue to, you know, use them and have more life for them.
Someone texted in the men's room in the Union Station, second floor, outstanding wall deco. That's very Chicago.
That is very Chicago, and that's why we love our city,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Someone, 773, talking about how they did the open house in 2019. They toured the National Shrine of St. Francis Xavier Cabrini at 2520 North Lakeview Avenue between Fullerton and Diversey. It was a shrine at a hospital founded by Mother Cabrini.
I was born in that hospital.
Are you
kidding me? St. Francis Cabrini Hospital, right next to the UIC Pavilion. It is now condos. It was repurposed as well.
There you go. But it was still there. Wow. That's amazing. What a coincidence.
Yes.
312-981-7200 if you have a favorite building. Carbon and Carbine building.
Oh,
the Champagne Tower, right?
Beauty. Yeah, exactly.
Is it hard for you to pick? Is it like choosing between kids to pick your favorite building in Chicago, or do you got
one? I'm like you. I grew up on sports. Wrigley Field is my happy place.
Yes.
I do, you know, I tend to go on opening day because I tend to walk over there in the winter to get my Springfield. But like in downtown, I think forever it'll have to be the Sears Tower. You know, I grew up in the suburbs,
yeah.
And you could see the Sears Tower from way out there. In fact, the suburb I grew up in that, you know, pretty much was close to Wisconsin, you could see the Sears Tower on clear days
Wow.
from a golf course. That's how spectacular the Sears Tower is.
That's so awesome.
And let me say, It's the Sears Tower stuff.
Oh, come on. I know. I'm someone that's just like, I'll just call it the Willis. I don't really care. But I know Sears has such a history. Speaking of Sears, you go to the North Lawndale neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's on the tour, the original Sears building,
the original
right?
Sears Tower is in Holman Square, which is exactly where you've said. And you could actually get spectacular views of the downtown. And it's a 360, so you could see all around. And it's the original Sears Tower where, you know, Sears had their original warehouse.
Well, let's talk about that for a second because we, you know, I mentioned at the top, oh, boy, you can walk by a building you've seen so many times in your neighborhood. What a chance to explore another neighborhood. And maybe a neighborhood you've heard something on the news about, and it's not the best news, but has so much history, to actually explore a new place, a new neighborhood, and get a different conception of it, perhaps.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the big goals of Open House Chicago, is getting someone to get out of their neighborhood and go to another one, right? Like, if I live on the north side, why don't I go to the west side and I check it out? Why don't I go to the south side? Why don't I go to South Shore or Hyde Park and see what they have? Hyde Park, for example, the Forum, another historic building where Nat King Cole actually played, and Muddy Waters was there, right? Get out of your neighborhoods, or maybe some of the south side goes up to the Rogers Park. Probably they may not be likely to go way far up north to a neighborhood like Rogers Park, right? Or head to North Lawndale and see the Sears Tower, the original Sears Tower that not many Chicagoans, I explained to someone and they look at me like I'm crazy. Like, did you know there's an original Sears Tower that was like this other tower they built before they actually built the tallest building in the world in Chicago?
Right. This is a question that deserves longer than a minute answer, but that's all we have time for. What does it mean if a Chicagoan or someone in the suburbs or wherever appreciates the buildings in their own city? How does that make us better as a collective?
I mean, that's a really good question. I think it makes us better because we appreciate our city, you know, like even when there's stuff like bad news we see in our city, and, you know, that could be recently, right, in our city, that, like, we appreciate Chicago. Like, some of the posts I saw on social media yesterday of people doing Open House Chicago was very much that Chicago pride. Like, this is why I love you. This is why I'm obsessed with you. You know, and I happen to be one of those people that love the city. I rode in seeing the skyline and seeing the Hancock coming into the city this morning, and I was like, this is why I love this city. This is why I'm in love. And this is why I want to make it a better place.
OpenHouseChicago.org is where you can go for information. The app is called?
OHC app.
That's great. Today till 5, or do the other stuff through the rest of the month. So anyway, thanks so much for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Really appreciate it. 720 WGN. A very happy Sunday, everyone. Thank you so much for giving us some time here this morning on just an incredible day in the city of Chicago and beyond. I don't see a cloud in the sky. Looks gorgeous out there. Great day for Bears Packers, perhaps a WNBA championship and whatever you're doing. But I also want to give some love to some of the great artistic things that are happening in our city throughout the next couple of weeks and really to the 24th, the Chicago International Film Festival. We got two people on the line to chat about that. First up, we have Vivian Tang. She's the managing director of Cinema Chicago and the Chicago International Film Festival. And we have Mimi Plouchet, the artistic director. First, Vivian, how are you doing here today?
We're doing great. It's beautiful out. It's a perfect day to watch movies with us.
Yeah, right. Mimi, I imagine you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad to have both of you here to talk about this. I'll start with Vivian, just to kind of about the size and the scope and I guess the elevator pitch about what the Chicago International Film Festival is all about.
Well, the Chicago International Film Festival, it's our 57th year. So we are the oldest competitive international film festival in North America, and we're showing more than 100 films from 60 countries, you know, over the course of 12 days. We're primarily based at AMC River East, but this year we're doing some really fun things by going into the community. So we're doing some pop-up screenings at the Music Box Theater. We're starting a 5-day pop-up series with Gene Siskel Film Center, and we'll be going to the Parkway Ballroom in Bronzeville this weekend for a program of short films on both Friday and Saturday. So it's just, we're just so excited. It's been 2 years since we've been able to gather together in person to experience film together, and it's been just an amazing time to welcome people back to the theater, as well as virtually and on the drive-in, too, as well.
That's great. Mimi, I know you've done this for 16 years now. How the heck do you start with a blank slate and you've got to build this festival? How do you pick and choose which movies you want to show?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, it gets more complicated every year because the number of films that we're considering goes up. So there's a huge selection to choose from. This year, The programming team looked at more than 6,000 films to get to, like Vivian said, just 90 features and about 57 short films. So, you know, I think the thing that's really thrilling is that there's so many good films being made around the world to choose from. So that's something that's like a reminder that, you know, cinema is alive and well all over the world. And it's, so it just becomes an exciting challenge to pick the ones that I think we're looking for films that will resonate with Chicago audiences, films that demonstrate kind of excellence in international cinema and new trends in filmmaking around the world. And of course, we love to bring in kind of the films that we think are going to be the awards contenders in the upcoming awards season and give everybody their first kind of sneak preview at all of those films that everybody's going to be talking about.
Vivian, I know the last 18 months has been hard on everybody, right? But the film industry, of course, has maybe suffered's not even a good description of it. But, you know, it's a resilient industry and there is just so much great art out there. It's almost overwhelming to a sense. How has the last 18 months been for you? I imagine you guys are just so excited for this year to be here.
Well, it has been, but, you know, it sort of gave us a chance to sort of reevaluate and reexamine just about what it means to experience film. And so fortunately, films is a medium that you can enjoy virtually. It's something that people do anyway. And so last year's festival was virtual and we had some screenings at the drive-in, but it's so there's still a way to connect and still a way to experience and be transported and experience new things. But there's nothing that beats that in-theater experience and being together in that collective, you know, nothing can beat it.
Yeah. The feeling of, I don't know, being in a room with people, experience that collective experience. And I'm not talking about watching sports on Twitter with everybody, although I do that. Don't get me wrong. That is a collective experience. But where
that's
you can
another kind of experience.
Yes, exactly. In many ways. Mimi, I imagine part of the challenge, and you kind of alluded to this, of giving some balance and just showing different techniques. What do you say to people that, and you're speaking right to me, really, Mimi, is I am kind of stuck in my ways of the things that I like. And now with streaming services at our fingertips, a lot of times we're so overwhelmed with new choices that we just resort to watching things we've watched before. Is the festival a good chance to kind of shake us loose of a little of that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a great opportunity to expand your horizons, but we do try to make it easy. So, for example, if you are a romantic comedy lover, just a romance lover, you know, on our website, you can go on and filter films by genre. So, or if you're a horror film lover, we have a great late night program. And so it'll absolutely be something you've never seen before. Every film is at the very least a Chicago premiere, with many of the films in the festivals being U.S. premieres or world premieres. But, you know, there's something that's going to probably feel familiar in terms of if you wanted to see a comedy. We've always got a great selection of comedies to choose from. So I think the idea is like trying to discover and explore something new, but maybe going through something that's familiar, knowing something that you already like, and then expanding kind of your understanding of cinema, your view of the world, or just kind of, you know, pure entertainment value, but with something that's new and unfamiliar.
And Mimi, I wanted to follow up with you too about the judging, the aspects of the competitiveness. I know you've served as juries and been a jury president. Boy, those are tough decisions to make.
They are. And I always, having done it before, I always am grateful and admire the work that our jury does, because in a very short period of time, they watch a large number of films. So here we in Chicago this week, we have jury members from all over the world, from Italy, from Argentina, from Canada, who are watching films together. And, you know, the idea is not that, you know, of course, the judging experience is subjective, but it's also they're doing it collectively and talking about the films and, you know, celebrating, I guess, aspects of each film. So there is a best film, but there's also awards that go to acting and cinematography and screenplay, so that, you know, the idea is that we are lifting up these films through the awards that we're giving them.
Vivian, what are the specs for people to make sure that they can check this out? I know ChicagoFilmFestival.com is a great place to start, and it's running for at least another week, right?
It is, and so we close with King Richard at the Music Box next Sunday, so there's still a week full of films to see.
And there's still tickets for some of these out there?
Yes, there are.
Oh.
Yeah, so most of the most updated information can be found on our website at chicagofilmfestival.com.
Mimi and Vivian, I know we just scratched the surface, but thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and after the break, we're actually going to talk to Joe Winston. He is the director behind Punch 9 for Harold Washington. It premiered last night, I believe, but there's another showing coming up. I'll see if there's still some tickets available to it. But either way, I just want to let you know about this film that did show at the Chicago International Film Festival and really dive into some Chicago history and the 1983 election. It's exciting stuff. We'll break it down after this on WGN. Had a chance to talk with director Joe Winston about Punch 9 for Harold Washington at the Chicago Film Festival. First, a clip from the movie.
What the people of Chicago want is what I stand for and will fight for.
Everywhere we went, you could feel the tenseness when you went into a white neighborhood.
I remember that I was with him that day. And I'm going to get emotional saying this, but he looked at me and he said, Kari, it's tough being a black man in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
It wasn't as scary as marching with King, but it was really close to it. You know, here you are, walking to church with the Vice President of the United States, and you're getting stoned.
I've got the people of Chicago with me, and that's it. But I need your help.
Epton for mayor before it's too late.
Yeah, that was the voice of a voiceover for the commercial for Harold Washington's opponent. Pretty intense stuff. Joe Winston is the director. Joe, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Pleasure to be here.
I am enthralled. I cannot wait to see this myself as a history buff and a lifelong Chicago area resident. And I really feel like this film, and correct me if I'm wrong, is going to introduce a lot of people not only to Harold Washington, even those folks that may remember him and remember his rise to becoming mayor, but I think for a new generation of Chicagoans, it'll be fascinating to see how good of a politician this guy was and how tense that 1983 election was.
It's an amazing story, and it really plays like a political thriller. You know, we're not just dusting off some history here, and it feels very of the moment, too. It feels to me, and this is what got me started wanting to make this film with the talented and diverse team that I was able to attract, that these battles, we're fighting them over and over again. It feels to me like it started here in Chicago in 1983, and those battles just radiated outwards to the entire country.
I had no idea till I was looking through some reviews and storylines about what you're going to be covering. But after Mayor Daley the First passes away in 1976, you at least dive in a little bit to the story of Wilson Frost, who was the legal successor to Mayor Daley and was literally locked out of the office.
Because he was a black guy. No other good reason. Yeah, we're going big with this story. I mean, to us, this is more than just a history of Chicago politics. This is kind of a fable, a parable, the kind of story you tell your children and your grandchildren about race, politics, and power, and how people on the outside can fight their way in by forming coalitions.
Was there things that you discovered? I imagine there were. I'm sure as a Chicagoan yourself, there's much you remember about that. But did you discover and learn a lot as you were interviewing these historians and political figures for the movie?
Oh, it was fascinating all the way in. And, of course, you know, as a kid, I experienced this firsthand. I think I was maybe 14, 15 years old when Harold was first elected. And I lived just down the street from him, so we would see him around. And, you know, he was a heroic figure to all of us. Just as a teenager, I just loved his sass and his brilliance and his wit and his swagger. But when I became a grown-up, I got to see firsthand, you know, how the raw politics of it and just how devious and mechanical all of this stuff is of people trying to get a hold of the levers of power. And it was very fascinating, I think, to have people really talk about it, frankly, all these years later.
I did kind of a deep dive into the 1983 election when I found out I was going to be chatting with you. And when you break down the wards and how they voted, whether it was for Epton or whether it was for Harold Washington, it is amazing to see some wards are nearly 100-0 on both sides. I mean, this election really split Chicago. I mean, look, we're a segregated city to this day in many ways. But boy, you could just look at those ward results and just see just how divided the city was over this election.
It was amazing, and it was something that had gripped the entire population. When Harold was running in the Democratic primary, there were four televised debates, an hour long, the kind of thing you never see anymore in local elections, and they were broadcast on every single TV station. when people came out to vote, I think the voter turnout rate was like in the 80, 85, 90% across the city.
I was kind of blown away just by seeing some of the images, even in just the little snippet that we played of things that were spray painted on a church that Harold Washington was going to visit, and the screaming at Harold Washington and former Vice President Mondale. I mean, you know, racial tensions are high today, without a doubt. But I mean, this was a powder keg sort of situation.
Absolutely. That's why I think this is such a great story, because, again, we fought those battles in Chicago in the 80s, and now the country is just starting to catch up to us. But it's the same fight. You know, it's an older, graying, white, often male generation that's clinging to power with their last grasp, and they get angrier as they go down.
So many Chicagoans are used to 50-0 city council votes. We've had a lot of those during the Daley administrations and to some extent the Emanuel administrations. Not the current one with Mayor Lightfoot, and certainly not for Harold Washington. Do you dive into his political know-how once he got the job to navigate a very contentious city council situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll be another eye-opener for people watching this movie, especially younger people, was to see how Harold and his coalition, you know, began to master the controls of government and to figure out how to really get things done. You know, winning elections is always exciting, but as we found out with the Obama years, right, that it takes a lot more than that. You have to actually govern.
I love looking at the list of people that are going to appear in this film, because anytime you get a nice historical documentary from 30, 40 years past, you see a lot of names of people that are now in such prominent roles in the Democratic Party that were young then, but were influential at the time.
I think that's part of Harold's legacy. He left us way too soon, of course, dying very dramatically just as he had been reelected, was consolidating power. But the talent that he amassed around him was incredible. People talk about it as a black Camelot, you know, and it was, he had a diverse array of very talented people who've gone on to do great things. And of course, he attracted a certain young community organizer to want to come to Chicago and start a career in politics himself, and he did okay.
Yeah, you're, of course, referring to former President Barack Obama. Let's talk a little bit. We just obviously lost a legend in Chicago, Timmel Black, and he's in the film too, yeah?
Oh, Timmy was such a treasure. It was a real honor to spend an afternoon with him, Tim Black. And yes, he does appear in Punch 9.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to seeing that, as well as Chance the Rapper, Mayor Lightfoot, of course, Chuy Garcia, and Valerie Jarrett as well, many others. Who should see this film? I mean, who is this for?
It's for everyone, really. And I think that's the key. I mean, you know, lots of films about great mayors or admired local figures are for the fans. But and the fans will find plenty to chew on here, believe you me. I mean, we really researched this from top to bottom. But our real desire is to reach out to new people, like the younger generation, like you alluded to earlier, people who haven't heard of Harold Washington, to see what's possible, what you can achieve against great odds.
All right. And that is a fascinating film. I cannot wait to see it. And by the way, there are still tickets to the in-person screening at AMC River East on Tuesday at 3 o'clock. It's a matinee, but I was just at ChicagoFilmFestival.com and bought a ticket, and you can too. Go there right now for seeing it. Or you can virtually see the movie Punch 9 for Harold Washington. You can stream it now, anytime, for $15 through the end of the festival, which is noon on October 24th, which is next Sunday. So be sure to check that out. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Dean Richards on this gorgeous Sunday morning. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, you just heard Hamp and OB are next at 11. Then we got Peter Greenberg at noon. Then Hamp and OB after the Bears game till 5. And then me, Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association at 5 o'clock. That is the sandwich that is today. And I said earlier, Peter Greenberg is the meat, and Hamp and OB are the cheese slices. I am the bread and mayo and mustard. I don't know who wants to be what. Schwan, you want to be mayo?
I don't care.
I called mustard earlier.
Okay.
All right. By the way, may I interject? Probably not good to call Hamp and OB cheese slices today when they're playing the Packers.
Oh, you're right. Tomatoes?
Yes. Tomatoes, bacon, yes. You know, whatever you want to go there.
Boy, oh boy, yeah. You're right about that, Andy.
So let's just get that out of the way.
Great catch. Hey, good news about President Clinton. Thanks for the update, Schwani. No matter which political affiliation you are, you want happy and healthy folks, and that was good to hear.
Yeah, released early this morning, around 8 o'clock California time. He spent one additional night in the hospital just to make sure everything was under control. It was, and so he is on his way.
That was an interesting election, 1992 with Ross Perot. This is all a segue to Stump the Schwan, by
and
the
I've
way.
And I have a trivia question
okay.
for anybody that wants to try, and it's fairly easy, really, and it's about President Clinton. It came to mind as okay. the story broke.
Okay, by the way, just to reset for everyone, as you all know, Dave Schwan is a historical genius who knows a lot about things. We are nerds together in this, so whenever we get to be on the air together, we like to have the listeners call in 312-981-7200 to try and stump Dave Schwan with presidential trivia or like general historical American trivia, I'd say. But president is what we're specifically going for.
With help from you.
Yes, I'm the lifeline.
Yes.
Which is never a good thing. Mazur will have some questions too.
So I do.
What was the trivia that you had, Schwan, about Clinton?
Oh, who was president before Bill Clinton? Who was president after Bill Clinton?
Bush and Bush.
Yes.
H.W. and,
yep.
And son.
And that was only the second time in the United States history that we've had a father and son who were presidents, respectively.
Adams and Q. Adams, 2 and 6.
Correct.
But we've also had a grandfather and grandson.
Yes, we have.
And William Henry Harrison, our 9th president, and Benjamin Harrison, our 23rd, I want to say. Yeah, because he was surrounded by Cleveland. Who was 22 and 24.
Did you
see? This is what we're talking about,
did
people.
Did you also know that William Henry Harrison was the son of one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Benjamin Harrison, I believe, the 5th was one of the founding fathers.
Wow. We got 21 more minutes of this, folks. So get ready.
All I remember as a kid was going to IHOP with my grandparents, uh-huh. and the little placemats had all the pictures of the presidents on them. And that's how I kind of started to learn it.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
How you learn them.
I got a book that had like a little couplet or quartet, four line poem for each president. I don't memorize them now, but that's how I started. And have, you know, you get a little fact about each one in the poem, and you'd flip the pages. That's how I started on this path.
Who was president when you were born, John?
Reagan. I'm a Reagan baby. Yes, okay. I was Reagan first term, but he won re-election the fall after I was born, or
right.
when I was born.
Okay,
so I'm a Reagan baby. How about you, Schwan?
Take a guess.
Oh, Kennedy.
You're close.
Johnson.
Nope.
Ike.
Yep.
All right. A lot of Ike babies here. I'm sure listeners have done
that. That was the height of the baby boom, of course.
Andy Mazur. Ooh. Ford.
Nope. Earlier than that.
Nixon.
Nope. Earlier than that.
Really?
Lyndon Johnson.
LBJ.
Yeah.
You're an LBJ baby.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. 20 more minutes left. 312-917.
19 minutes and 35 seconds.
But who's counting?
I swear, it'll be fun. No. So also, you know, the one piece of trivia I always love to throw out there about presidents is about John Tyler's living grandson. So let me recap this for you. John Tyler was born in 1790 during George Washington's first term. And it's almost insane to believe that he has a living grandson. We're talking just 2 generations still alive today. His name is Harrison Ruffin Tyler. He's 91 years old, and the Washington Post did a whole write-up about him, and they talk about how his, you know, just 2 generations bridged this incredible gap, because John Tyler was a very controversial president and person. He was a slave owner. He was thrown out of his own political party, the Whigs, for vetoing so many bills. And he never makes it onto the list of best presidents. And he took over after William Henry Harrison died. He was the first president to take over after the death of a former president. And that caused a whole constitutional crisis because the founding fathers didn't clearly establish exactly how the line of succession went. And they cleaned that up later with an amendment. But I just always find it crazy. He actually had 2 living grandsons until recently. But John Tyler had kids into his 70s. They had one when he was 75. He had a child. And that child had their kids into their 70s as well. And now they one of them still lives in his 90s. I just think that's crazy, Dave.
It is. When you think about the fact that Tyler himself was born during George Washington's presidency.
Yes.
That is unbelievable.
312-981-7200. If you've got any questions, ready to go to try and stump Schwani. I know it's hard to come up with presidential trivia. You can just Google it and ask one of those questions. I know we had some on the text line earlier, but Andy, why don't you prime the pump here?
Okay, let's see. And these are easy ones, I'm sure, for Schwani. But who was the first left-handed president?
The first left-handed president?
Correct. I think there's been a few of them.
There has been a few. George W. or H.W. Bush was left-handed.
Yeah, that's not the first one.
No, it's not the first one.
I think I might have an answer.
Okay, John, I'll defer to you.
Go for it. I don't know why, but the name Garfield sticks out to me.
John Garfield?
James Garfield. Of all the left-handed presidents, he was first.
Hey!
And they say that he was partially ambidextrous as well, so he could switch between using his left and his right hand.
Oh, both sides. Nice job, Garfield. There you go. All right, so we got one. That counts because you stumped Schwani a little bit, but I'm there to help him. So you got another one for
us,
Andy?
Need all the help I can get, I think, today.
Okay, here's one. Who was the first U.S. president that was born a U.S. citizen?
I do know that one, I think.
Born a U.S. citizen?
Yeah, so after the country, you know, was formed. So you got to go at least a couple years, right? Because you got the founding fathers are what?
It might be William Henry Harrison.
I'm going to say Andrew Jackson.
I'm going to say incorrect on both accounts.
What?
Just think about Seinfeld and Kramer and the Street Gang, the Van Buren boys, Martin Van Buren.
Oh, split it.
First U.S. president born a U.S. citizen, and the only president to learn English as a second language.
Oh, what was his first?
That's a good question. I probably shouldn't have brought that up since I don't know.
He probably spoke Dutch.
Dutch.
Yeah.
Yep, I just saw Dutch.
Yeah.
And I believe he might have been the first president to be photographed as well. There's old pictures of Van Buren after he left office that are incredible.
Actually, it's John Quincy Adams.
Okay. Well, there you go. There you go. All right, 312-981-7200. Get your questions and we'll have more from Andy Mazur as well. There we go. Feel bad interrupting the national anthem. That's okay, though. Here we are, 312-91-7200. John Hansen in for Dean Richards for a few more minutes. We're playing Stump the Schwan. Dave Schwan, our presidential experts, had a lot on the text line. Rook, you're looking at those.
By the time this is over, I'll be far from an expert.
Yeah, exactly. And Rook, you said you portrayed a couple presidents, right?
I sure did.
In plays?
I was in a play in my college called 44 Plays for 44 Presidents.
Okay.
Written by the Neo-Futurists, who are a Chicago-based comedy troupe. And what they did, it was right up to the end of the Obama administration. So each president was a two-minute scene. And I was in, it was an ensemble. So we all got to play different presidents and have a good time with it. Part of it was actually filmed with 44 schools across the country. And they compiled one big video of each school got
cool.
a different president.
So who were you? You were...
I was one of the Roosevelts.
You don't remember which one?
I was
one?
Teddy. Okay. But there were four of us playing Teddy at the same time. That was like 6 years ago.
Okay.
But the fun one was Teddy Roosevelt because we got the glasses and handlebar mustaches and stuff, and we ran around the stage doing like saying famous quotes of his and like pretending to box each other. It was a great time.
Teddy Roosevelt, my favorite president.
Absolutely same.
Schwan, you got one? I forget who you're for. You're a Lincoln guy,
right? I'm a Lincoln, yeah. That's right. Lincoln and into this century, probably Franklin Roosevelt, and I do remember John Kennedy. So
312-91-7200, starting to get some calls and some texts as well. Andy, why don't you give us another one here if you got one at the ready?
Okay, I got one left here that I looked up it earlier. Which president was a classically trained pianist and played four other instruments?
Four other instruments.
Nixon.
Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Really?
37th president. His mom encouraged him to play piano at an early age. He went on to learn the violin, the clarinet, the saxophone, and accordion.
Yep. And he also wrote some music, too.
And he performed on the Jack Parr program.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I mean, Nixon is a complex figure in our American history. I think a lot of people will remember him, of course, for the resignation in Watergate, as well they should, and his increasing involvement in Vietnam, of course. But a complicated person, Dave Schwan, to say the least.
Yes, he really was, and had that reputation long before he became president, when he was vice president with Dwight Eisenhower in the 50s, and the Kennedy-Nixon debates, one of them taking place right here in Chicago, and what were called the so-called kitchen debates with Nikita Khrushchev here in the United States, debating the merits of democracy versus communism.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we got a call. Jeanette from Roselle. How are you doing here this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. You got a question for Schwan?
Yes, I have three quick ones.
All right. Okay. Go to the first one.
What president married his cousin?
Oh, well, I think I know this one.
Oh, Franklin Roosevelt.
Yes.
You are right.
Hey, hey, Dave. All right, what's number two?
What presidents were cousins?
Cousin presidents.
Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt. They were
You're
distant cousins.
Smart.
Fifth cousins, I believe, yeah. All right, what's the third one?
What president's grandson married another president's daughter?
Ah, think about that, Dave. I think I've got help
for
you.
A grandson.
Married a president's daughter.
Yeah, I would say the grandson was Benjamin Harrison, but I don't know who his wife was.
I'll give you a clue, because I think I know the answer, Jeanette. They were married in the White House.
Yes. Well, now I don't know that. I really don't know.
I think I do. Think of the retreat of the president, Dave Schwann.
Camp David.
And that would be named after?
David Eisenhower.
And he married Nixon's daughter.
There you are.
Yeah. Okay, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeanette, that was fun. Thanks so much for the questions. Those were good
ones. Thank you.
312-981-7200. Yeah, and I think it was Trish was married in the White House to David Eisenhower.
In the Rose Garden. Yes, to David Eisenhower. Right.
312-981-7200 if you've got any other questions coming on the line. I've got a few on the text message line, so I won't answer these, but 217 wants to say which president served two terms non-consecutive.
Grover Cleveland.
Yes, Grover Cleveland. The only president to have done that as of right now. You never know. That could be another trivia question. We could be updating our trivia.
Yes, in another 5-6 years, may well be.
What's interesting about the Cleveland thing is that, so when people say, so Joe Biden is the 46th president of the United States. So when you ask people how many people have served as president, people often say, oh, 46 now. But that's not correct. It's 45 because they count the two terms of Cleveland as different, you know, administrations and different president. So it goes Cleveland 22, Benjamin Harris 23, Harrison, and then Cleveland is 24. So there's only been 45 people that have served.
45 people.
People.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
And, 6-3-0 letting us know it was Julie Nixon that married Eisenhower, not Trish. So thank you very much for the quick update.
One of the daughters of Lyndon Johnson was married when he was president. I remember watching that on TV, but the wedding took place in the National Cathedral in Washington, though.
That's a good poll, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not hard to get a venue when daddy's the president.
Yeah.
I've got another one dealing with marriage. How about this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Which president was never married?
Ooh, I know this one.
James Buchanan.
Yeah. And he remains the only president never to have been married.
Yeah.
Number 15 before Lincoln.
Right, exactly. All right, Rook, you got one?
From the text line. It was, how many presidents have died on July 4th?
Oh, I think
I saw the answer to this. I was looking.
Two?
I think it's three.
You think it's three?
I think three of the first five died on July 4th.
Jefferson, John Adams.
And Madison died, I think.
Or
Monroe, one of the two.
Monroe, you're right with Monroe. The other two are correct. Yeah, so three presidents died on July 4th. Coincidence?
In fact, Adams and Jefferson died 50 years to the date.
Just several hours apart.
It's an incredible story. If you haven't seen HBO's John Adams, the miniseries, boy, that's now 13 years old, which is hard to believe. I would give that a look.
I think they ran it again here during President's Day or Memorial Day this year.
That's cool. Yeah. All right, we got another one for the text line here. I have the question and answer, so I can't help you, Dave. Who is the only president with a PhD? The only president with a PhD. It's a good one.
That is a good one.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Think professor. Professor. Collegiate.
Then I think of Gilligan's Island. So I can't. And I don't think.
I'll give you a state. New Jersey. From New Jersey.
Oh, Woodrow Wilson.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
President of Columbia University, I believe, also.
Exactly.
Yeah, before he was president. Yes.
Look at this. 312-981-7200 if you got any last-minute questions. Tell you what, let's take the break now, and we'll maybe have another question or two. Chuan, you did very well, my friend.
Thank you.
And then I want to talk
Thank you for your help, too.
Oh, yeah, no problem. No problem. Couple texts, by the way, Chuan, you did well. I think the official score was four yes, one no, I think was our thing. Although Wilson was a Princeton.
Princeton, not Columbia. Princeton, okay.
One of those fancy ones. Nice text from the 847. Now I know that WGN stands for World's Geekiest Network. It's from Taxi Driver Bob. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
Hope you learned something today. See, that's what we do here on the program. I'm sure you learn a lot when Dean Richards is here, but we, you know, I strove to make sure that we all learned something. We all had a little useless trivia knowledge for our next dinner party.
And we, in turn, learn it, too.
Yeah. This is why, when if we ever go to a dinner party together, Dave, you and I are just going to end up in the corner.
Everybody's going to leave.
It's going to be
or
me.
Or they're going to put us in the backyard.
Yes. And you know what? I don't blame them. And we'll have
so
a
do you
ball.
Remember what happened in the Garfield administration?
As everyone moves away. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us here today. It's been a blast filling in for Dean.